This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. Joining me today is my co-host, Ron Bachman, Chairman of the Advisory Board. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. How you doing?
It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta.
Finally, we got rid of all that rain that came through. Some of the rest of the country got hit a lot worse than us, both in the south of us and the north of us.
Yeah, I was down in New Orleans all week, and we got good bit of rain.
Well, New Orleans is below the sea level, isn't it?
Yeah, sea level.
Well, it's not anything to laugh about, I guess, because so many people did get hurt in a lot of different ways. But fortunately, the sun is out, summer's on the way, warmer weather, blue skies.
It's a good day today.
It's a good day to be alive.
Yeah. Well, I thought today, I come back from, I was invited along with Brent Macy, our managing director, and also a co-host to attend the Legis Technologies user conference. And who was there was, primarily their key partners, TPAs, mm-hmm. and others. And the whole discussion throughout the whole program was where consumerism is today, where CDH, engagement is, where private exchange is projected to be, where it is and where it's projected to be. So I thought it, we sitting here a week before, a little less than a week before, our event next week, IEC Forum and Expo in Atlanta. It's a good time for you and I to just kind of reflect on where we see the industry and where we are as the Institute. Because when we all started out, late 2006, 2007, it was the first of 2007 that you and I got together. Right. We had this thing.
Gosh, it's been that long?
It's been a long time. But, we reflected on the fact that we saw the healthcare consumerism, as a legitimate megatrend. Right. That's coming from Newt, very smart guy, and you, one of the industry thought leaders, and a vision I had as a media guy.
Right.
But we did a lot of heavy lifting, as did a lot of people in this industry, a lot of friends of ours, a lot of member of our League of Leaders. But we sit here today, and healthcare consumerism and the moving parts like CDH and private exchanges is in full acceleration. Mm-hmm. We are moving rapidly through what we see as early majority adoption phase. Very interesting time.
Well, it goes back to any concept has to have a language that resonates. And if you really go back and say, how did this stuff really get some legs? For the most part, prior to 2000, 2003, 2004, in that era where health reimbursement arrangements and health savings accounts really came to the forefront through legislation and regulation, most of healthcare was government-oriented language. It was around security, protection, coverages. You had Medicare and Medicaid, and it was around the hospitals, DRGs, and mm-hmm. physicians, CPT codes. It was all around things that didn't involve the consumer. And the language, starting in about 2000, when we had the very first original health reimbursement arrangements, they weren't even called that. They were called personal care accounts because they hadn't been approved by the IRS yet. But we got the language. The mm-hmm. language began mm-hmm. to focus on the consumer. Mm-hmm. Self-help, self-care, mm-hmm. personal responsibility, transparency, portability, consumerism. Those words started to resonate, and a movement began to go towards the consumer and what do they need and how do we engage them more.
Right.
That really started off the process, and it was recognized that in order to engage anybody in anything, they have to have a financial stake in the game, mm-hmm. which is why those account-based plans were so important in kicking this off. And then we went beyond that, and language was more around health literacy. You never heard that term.
That's right.
Before 2000, that's right. Health literacy. That's even relatively recent, the last few years. Engagement. Those things were not part of our language. Now we have those things, and we continue to build language around the consumer's needs. And now we start to go beyond that language into not just plan design around account-based plans of health savings accounts and health reimbursement arrangements and CDHC, but we're moving towards the language of how do the providers better right. engage right. the consumer. Right. So now we're talking about telemedicine, telehealth, mHealth. Dermatologists now are providing, derma health, and there's all this new language that's developing around the delivery of yep. consumer-oriented products and services. So that's what I sort of see as the big mega trend movement that's been going on. It starts with understanding in the language and being able to communicate thoughts and ideas. And then those thoughts and ideas expand with all the entrepreneurial capacity in this country. We still have, you know, $2.7 trillion of our economy going towards healthcare. Well, that's going to naturally attract entrepreneurs trying to find new products and services. And with the focus on the consumer, we're now seeing a lot more products and services around the consumer. Health apps, all sorts of health information. Your phone is going to be able to connect you to all sorts of resources. Your PC is going to be able to do that. All sorts of concierge services. This is all great news for the consumer out there. And at the end of the day, it's good for the health of the consumer.
And it all started long before ACA was even in the glimmer of people's eyes.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree, and I think you and I both agree that the healthcare law brought a real focus on some elements that needed to change. And you know, it has there are some positive attributes in there around health management, wellness, and incentives. And it's just really brought the market together, you know, to understand that it needed to change. But healthcare consumerism was alive and well, you know, before that. It got slowed down a little bit by, you know, the debate around ACA. Got slowed down a little bit about recession. And, you know, the missing link was always the consumer.
Yes.
And it wasn't just about cost shifting, as you and I talk about. It is about embracing the consumer, educating the consumer, providing the consumer, the employee consumer, with good tools and services, as we talk about, to enable them to become better consumers of health and healthcare. And it's about all the stakeholders coming together. You know, I mean, that's a big difference. We go back to managed care. We go back years. You know, there was a disconnect between a lot of parties. I mean, health insurance was a transaction business. You come in February, you know, you tell the employer you're going to get them a modest increase. Mm-hmm. They, you know, everyone goes away. This is about 24/7, 365 engagement by all stakeholders around developing programs and services, about helping that consumer become, you know, a better consumer of health and healthcare.
It is. And the ACA certainly has some things that need to be done in terms of coverages, eliminating pre-existing condition, maybe even taking off the lifetime caps, although that's – I can debate that with some folks. But for those who had high costs, you know, there were annual reinstatement of some of the limits when we had a $5 million, $10 million limit. But taking those things off, covering children age 26 sounds great. It was pretty much done the industry norm anyway, but, you know, it kind of solidified that. But probably the pre-existing condition, the focus on driving insurance into the uninsured population, enrolling Medicaid patients who were eligible but didn't sign up. A lot of good things were in the ACA. But what it didn't really do, it really didn't create a focus on the consumer. The consumer movement grabbed on the parts that it could, but it was not a consumer-oriented, patient-oriented piece of legislation. And if the people in Washington have any sense at all, when they get around to either modifying, changing it, updating it, whatever they're going to do as we move forward, the next step has to be, how do I bring the patient and the consumer into the picture here? There have been some recent movements. For example, the patient ought to be able to pay for healthcare costs out of either savings or out of insurance, whichever they choose. Right. And there was a $2,000 limit on how big the deductible could be. Well, I might be able to handle $5,000 deductible. Somebody else might not. But I should have that choice.
Yep.
And we didn't have that choice until a recent ruling came from HHS that allowed higher deductibles for the small group plans. Otherwise, we were pretty much forced to pay for healthcare costs through premiums, and those are third party, and third party reimbursements always distort economics. So what I would suggest to those people in Washington, and whether you're on the side of repeal it and replace it, or whether you recognize that we got to reform it and change it, whatever we have, whatever those changes are, they really need to be focused on, how do I benefit the consumer? And by the way, we've got a great debate about that coming up on May 7th. That's a lead into that, right?
Dr. John Goodman and Dr. Ken Thorpe joining us for it. But I think the other point too, Ron, is that for those out there that are again, on either side of, you know, coming to agreement on changing and fixing it or replacing it, is let's embrace the employer too. Let's don't impede them from doing the right thing for their employee consumers.
Right.
You know, there's a lot in the law right now that is going to cause a lot of strain and a lot of take the employer's eye off the ball of really doing the right thing for their employees, and which they want to do.
Well, you know, we're really seeing that. You know, we've without getting into details, we have this generational model that the IHC has recognized for a long time from sort of where we are, where we're going. And the third-generation model, I've always said we're in second generation, moving to the third. But, you know, we're pretty much entering rapidly more into the third generation, which is around the workplace impact of healthcare. Do I have productive employees? Are they, how do I prevent unscheduled sick days? And how do I keep them happy on the job? We're seeing a lot more emphasis in that particular strain of how does the employee in the workplace function most effectively around stress, mm-hmm. around stress management, around depression issues. That's a big issue in the workplace.
Yep.
We're also going to see in one of the segments today around hearing.
Yep.
Hearing loss, and how do you have productive employees if they're hearing? That's what my wife always says. I got selective hearing. I know. That's typical of males. But on the other hand, it is a real issue around a number of areas of how do you create a productive workforce with your health benefit plans and designs and emphasis in the workplace. That's why I don't think employers are getting out of the healthcare business. It's too important to their most important asset, their employee staff. So I think the employers are going to be and stay very involved. I think that they could probably actually take a lot more lead in the direction of improved health and health care and engagement of the employees than they have in the past. So I'm really excited about the future. You know, you and I have talked for a long time, even when all the debate between 2009 and the passage of ACA in 2010 and all the debate in the last 4 years, that from the IHC standpoint, healthcare consumerism is a mega trend that's going to exist regardless of any legislation, regardless of any election. It can be speeded up or slowed down, but at the end of the day, it's too powerful a concept to go away. It's not a fad. It's not a temporary movement. It's, in fact, a continuous growth that's going to take us into a better future for both healthcare, costs, access, and quality.
Yeah, and it's not – and Dan, you know, as we kind of wind this up, you and I talk every day about – and we want the industry to hear this loud and clear. It's about healthcare reform, not health insurance reform.
Yes.
A lot of dynamics, a lot of disruption with exchanges, very much a part of healthcare consumerism and healthcare reform. A lot of change going on with HSA, HRA, FSA, and, you know, HSAs, you know, projected to take over HRAs, which they should, you know, mm-hmm. in the future. Those are all positive aspects of the changing world of healthcare benefits. But healthcare consumerism, as you're talking about, goes way beyond that in enabling an employer with their employees to develop a fully rounded program to build those better consumers of health and healthcare. And our goal today still is to be that collective voice on healthcare consumerism, to enable this industry to access an information hub, and equally important, to collaborate with each other to help build best or better practices. And next week at our forum, you know, our forum brings this to life. It's when we'll have 750-plus attendees, including, you know, our sponsors, that they're together, you know, listening, learning, talking together, with that common goal of building best and better practices.
And anybody who hadn't signed up, it's not too late, is it?
Yeah, it's not too late.
And they're going to miss out on a great, great series of presentations. Just look at the agenda if you haven't signed up yet, because if you look at that agenda, I've talked to so many people that say, I don't know what to go to next. I mean, there's so many great workshops, so many great pre-cons. They want to be to all of them. And I said, well, just bring a whole bunch of folks from your company and send one to each one and compare notes afterwards. So I'm excited about it because I'm going to be doing some presenting myself, and it's always a great fun. I learn a lot from the audience as well because there's a great sharing that goes on with these conferences.
Well, listen, if you haven't signed it up, go to our main website, www.theiacc.com, and you can click to the forum site. And stay tuned for the next segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
Certification. Do you know why becoming a certified healthcare consumerism specialist is more important than ever in 2014? Adding this specialized designation to your credentials tells employers or your clients that you understand how much our industry has changed and how to navigate that change successfully. IHC University's certification program offers coursework both online and live at their biannual forum conference series, and testing is completed online. Reaffirm your position as a leader in the health and benefit management industry. Download our certification overview and learn more at www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Hi, this is Brent Macy, Managing Director for the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism. If you're a solution provider in this marketplace, I'd like to talk to you more about our corporate membership program that will allow you to showcase your solutions in front of our audience who will be making decisions on what they're going to be putting in place surrounding their healthcare benefit packages in 2013 and beyond. Contact me at 770-296-7276 to learn more.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, this is Doug Field along with my co-host Ron Bachman, and welcome back to this segment of Healthcare Consumerism Radio, where we're going to get into a discussion on very topical subject, private exchanges. And joining us to lead that discussion with us today is Mike Solomon, co-founder and executive vice president and the chief marketing officer for Digital Insurance, which is one of the industry's largest, most technology-advanced employee benefit-only agencies. Hey, Mike, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Hey, give our audience, I mean, we want to get into talking about private exchanges with you and get your perspective, but give our audience kind of a brief background on digital insurance and also digital benefit advisors.
So digital today is really has two divisions of the company. One is digital benefit advisors, which is a middle market focused employee benefits agency operation around the country. And digital insurance is effectively an outsourced solution where we assist agencies all over the country to streamline and more efficiently manage small business. So we've become a fairly significant enterprise operating in about 35 states around the country with about 500 or so employees, really focused on employee benefits across the board. That's what we do.
Great. A lot of discussion about private exchanges. You're right in the middle of that. Give us kind of your perspective on where you see the exchange discussion going as it relates to large, small, and mid-sized employers.
So I'm very excited about the opportunity presented by the private exchange framework. You know, in some ways, I view it as a gateway from the current employer-based employer sort of decides everything type of employee benefit solution, health insurance solution, to more of a consumer-centric model downstream where the employer can still participate and organize and do diligence around building a benefits program, but is really creating an opportunity for private exchanges to reach through the employer down to the individual consumer level. And I think begin to really fundamentally reshape the way health insurance works, the way health care works. And that's probably what I'm most excited about. It's not for all employers, but I think it's a key component of how the system is going to organize itself in the future, and it's pretty exciting.
Mike's Ron Bachman here. Can you give us an understanding from your perspective what's happening in the smaller group marketplace? We hear more about the larger groups putting the retirees into exchanges. What's happening with active employees, both at the large employer size and then at the small employer size?
Well, we're today very much focused on the small and mid-size employer. I think most of, to your point, most of the energy and headlines to date have been around retiree populations, or really the largest employers in the country who are being largely managed by the largest consulting firms in the country had been beginning to sort of shape the private exchange marketplace, really at the upper end of the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's very surprising. I think that the most well-capitalized advisors have been shaping the space up market where most of their clients are. I think at the end of the day, private exchanges, who sticks and who doesn't, it's a volume game, and carriers want to basically work with and through private exchanges that can drive volume of membership. And so I think it'll start up market like it has and then flow down to small and mid-sized employers. I actually think the interesting thing is you could make the case that progress thus far in the private exchange market upstream is probably where the least amount of impact will be felt.
Mm-hmm.
We're very much focused on creating leverage in the marketplace from a pricing standpoint at the small and the mid-sized employer. And it's tougher sledding in that regard,
mm-hmm.
But I think it's where the single largest opportunity presents itself. It's 8 or 9 out of every 10 employers in the marketplace, and I think the firms that can figure out the small and mid-sized market have a tremendous opportunity because most of the largest advisors and consultants are really focused up market. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, Mike. I concur with you. I'm coming back from a meeting with a private exchange player to go unnamed, and been talking to quite a few of them lately, like yourself. And I think the eyeballs are turning to the 100 and 2,500 employee based market because there's a belief that that's where the most help can be provided. Going back to your vision on the model, where that employer does want to still provide that healthcare benefits and health solution to their employees, but how do they do it in the most efficient ways? And private exchanges are emerging as that opportunity, particularly when married with defined contribution.
Yeah, totally agree. I will tell you that in conversations that I've had, in conversations that our teams have had across the country, in focus groups that we've listened to, I think it's pretty clear. I think employers are very much, they feel a responsibility in this equation, but really what we're hearing is they want to participate. They don't want to own every decision relating to product configuration and how everything needs to be managed downstream. And that to me is why we really look at the private exchange as an opportunity for the employer to still participate, for the employer to still organize and help finance. But it's the ability to reach through the employer down to the consumer. That's really the tremendous opportunity here. If we can activate the consumer, and you guys talk about this all the time, but if we can reach through, it's going to take software, it's going to take call center capability. You can look to other aspects of the financial services industry to see what this is going to ultimately look like. But if we can get in there and end up helping to create a more informed, engaged, empowered consumer,
mm-hmm.
Who really demands a better, more efficient system, I think that's we have our opportunity to affect change now, and I think the private exchange could be a catalyst to make that happen. I kind of view it as this is our chance to affect change. We need to get it right.
Mike, in any transformation that goes on, and clearly exchanges is part of a major movement and shift in the whole marketplace, the delivery system, there's a lot of players that usually start off, but then there's consolidation of the industry. Where do you see that happening? How is it happening? Is it starting to happen already? And what's the effect on the consumer that may be buying a product through one exchange and they either, stop being in exchange or get bought out by somebody else? What's happening in your view, and where are we going with potential consolidation?
Well, look, I think that any time you have an industry, we look at this pretty simply. Healthcare reform has got everyone at the table understanding the system's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think hospitals and doctors are going to get squeezed. I think carriers are going to get squeezed. And I think anybody who is an intermediary in the channel, whether you call yourself an agent, a broker, an advisor, whether you call yourself an exchange, whatever the case may be, scale and efficiency and operational scope are going to become critically important. And if you think about it, we have a very fragmented distribution, organization today around the country. I think you're seeing wide-scale consolidation among brokers and agents. You're seeing consolidation in the software solutions as the software side of it begins to consolidate. So I don't know what the number is in terms of how many private exchanges we end up with. I think employers will do diligence and consumers mm-hmm. will do diligence on which provide the greatest level of value. It's early in the game, mm-hmm. but you're not going to see hundreds of private exchanges around the country. I think it will be tens of exchanges probably. We're very focused on going after the end of the marketplace that most of the well-capitalized firms aren't. There's a reason, really. If you look at the life cycle of digital, we decided to align with a Fortune 500 company because our view was we need access to capital to build for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But the system's going to look very different, and efficiency is going to become increasingly important. Our future as an advisor is more work for less pay, so you better figure out how to organize yourself differently, deal with consolidation. And so I think that's going to be a continued trend, and if anything, it probably accelerates. But flow between exchanges, I think, is something that the system will work itself out. So we just got to.
So what are the three keys to being most successful as an exchange?
Ultimately, I would say today that if you can scale to the point of relevancy, I think that's I think the early, in the first year or two, you have to get big enough to matter. You need to get big enough to survive.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I really think it becomes about service at both the employer level and at the consumer level. The exciting part, it's sort of like, be careful what you ask for. You might get it.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers are all of a sudden going to be thrust into the equation. But they're ill-prepared for the employer freeing up the reins for people to make more decisions. So we really need to understand how to reach through and get to the consumer. But the entire system is today organized around the employer. So the companies and the intermediaries, I think, that find a way to engage at that level, I think it involves software. I think it involves call center capability. But ultimately, I think the service experience is what's going to delineate the winners from the losers, and that's really what we're focused on as an organization, the client experience.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you, Mike. Listen, we got about a minute to go. I mean, time flies here when we're having fun, and it's been a very good discussion. We'll have to have you back on, too. But leave our audience with a couple clear takeaways from your seat, please.
Well, I think ultimately, as an industry, we are educating ourselves on private exchange. So probably the most, I say this to our teams across the country every day, you got to get a glove and you got to get in the game and you got to figure out what these private exchanges are all about. You have to begin to understand the differences between the solutions in the marketplace. I think you got to look beyond the software piece of the equation to understand product choice and who ultimately is going to be able to deliver a client service experience that works. But anybody, whether you're at the employer level, the advisor level, even on the carrier side, everyone's trying to figure it out. So we need to learn, adapt, and evolve in this space quickly. But you got to get in and start making that happen.
All right. Well, Mike, listen, appreciate the discussion today. Have a great weekend. And walk across the street and join us tomorrow. We'd love to have you join us at Forum next week and join in this discussion.
Appreciate the opportunity, guys, and we'll definitely have people there.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks
take care.
Bye-bye.
To our audience, stay tuned for the next segment, Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
Solution providers, are you aware of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism's multiple marketing platforms? You're invited to get a little closer to IHC with our Solution Provider Membership Marketing Program. Through IHC's exclusive Solution Provider Membership, your business gets an all-access pass to engaging your prospects. This membership embeds your business within the Institute, which immediately aligns your company, its solutions, and your key executives with the nationally credible IHC brand and shows your support of the healthcare consumerism movement as a market-wide solution. And that's just the beginning. Contact IHC's Managing Director, Brent Macy, today at bmacy@theihcc.com.
Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Learn, connect, share. Join us every Friday at 11 o'clock to learn all those confusing issues around healthcare, Obamacare, Medicare, Medicaid. We'll help you find the answers, help you stay in compliance. Join us Friday at 11 o'clock.
PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com. Have you checked out the only online guide where employers, health plans, brokers, and consultants can navigate private exchange and defined contribution markets? Browse PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com today. The emergence of private health insurance exchanges represents perhaps the most significant shift in how Americans purchase health benefits in years. As employers move their employee population into private exchanges, this trend is on a growth projection into the 2015 benefit year and beyond, according to research published by Allegis Technologies. Visit PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com today to browse our national searchable directory and for Healthcare Exchange Solutions magazine and newsletter. Be sure to submit your listing for inclusion in this groundbreaking guide at www.PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com. That's www.PrivateHealthcareExchanges.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, this is Doug Field along with my co-host Ron Bachman, and welcome back to the segment of Healthcare Consumers Radio, where we're going to really get into a topic that we continually talk about and controlling costs under the Affordable Care Act. And joining us to lead that discussion is Dr. Puttarasu with Vital Springs Technology. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Hey, tell us a little bit about Vital Springs. I know you've been around for quite a while, and just tell us a little bit about, tell our audience a little bit about Vital Springs Technologies.
So Vital Spring is a software company that was started many years ago by me while I was practicing at Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. It's part of my MBA thesis, and we have been working with multiple stakeholders in the healthcare industry in terms of helping them use big data and analytics to improve cost and quality in the healthcare system, so the likes of large employers as well as insurance companies and others that desperately need access to efficient data to help them better manage costs in a challenging environment.
You've just added a couple of very key heavy hitter advisors. You want to tell our audience about who you just brought on board?
We did. So we've brought on the likes of Tom Daschle and Newt Gingrich, in addition to some other very prominent leaders within the healthcare industry from both the employer, the insurance, as well as public policy sectors. We're very excited about that because at a time where the company is growing tremendously, we are eager to be working with these leaders to continue to accelerate our presence in the market in terms of helping transform the industry in improving a lot of the efficiencies that have been a real challenge in terms of how data is accessed in the market, how technology is used to more efficiently process data and help companies get much faster in terms of how they innovate.
Doctors, Ron Bachman here. You know, the Institute has long had a belief that at least two major aspects are necessary for the most effective healthcare consumerism concept. One is engaging the patient financially, giving them a stake in the game. But the other critical part is getting information. Now, most of the information that you see out there today and a large part of what you've been very successful at is helping the providers and the insurance companies with data. Can you talk about that a little bit, how important and what that's done to delivery of care or the development of coverage? But then maybe reach down into, I know it's a multiple-part question, I guess, but reach down into the consumer themselves. When is the information going to be able to benefit them, and what kind of information can help the consumer make better health and healthcare decisions?
So at the core of getting consumers engaged is the ability to have data on what's called a longitudinal basis, which mm-hmm. means that, let me give you an example. If I'm a 50-year-old employee of Lockheed Martin, and Lockheed Martin provides insurance for us through UnitedHealthcare, I happen to be part of a corporate wellness program. I work out at Gold's Gym. I use a Fitbit to track how I'm doing. There's also an incentive program that Lockheed Martin has that will enable me to get a discount on our premiums if I engage in their wellness programs. I shop at, I get my prescription drugs at Walgreens. I go to Whole Foods to buy my food. This could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
This could be the average American consumer today within the healthcare system. And every single day, think about all of the things that I've mentioned. There is data that is being generated within the system about all of my experiences, all the way from where I'm getting my benefits from Lockheed Martin and UnitedHealthcare to everything I'm doing in the wellness program to what I'm doing within my day-to-day life, and potentially what I'm doing when I go see the doctor, right?
Right.
And you think about all the data that's being created every single day that is completely fragmented. Now, whether I'm Lockheed Martin, UnitedHealthcare, Walgreens, Fitbit, Healthways, the consumer wellness company, or the provider, every one of these stakeholders in the system has a singular focus on needing to engage that consumer, right? That's where everybody converges.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the challenge is that the information for that employee is fragmented. So UnitedHealthcare has a small piece of it. Fitbit has a small piece of it. Mm-hmm. The wellness program has a small piece of it. Lockheed Martin does. Walgreens
right.
does. But where is the ability to tie together all of that information that is relevant to the health and wellness of that person, that is important for optimizing how they engage within the system? Well, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to engage that person is if you've got a continuous ability to pull all of that together. And everybody needs it. And so what we've accomplished, it took us, over a decade to build, was building the plumbing and the connectivity that links all of those disparate pieces so that you can get a 360-degree perspective in terms of what's happening to better engage consumers, because without it, it's a black hole.
Right. So, Doctor, is this in place right now, being used right now in the market?
It is.
Okay.
It is, and so we're working with many different stakeholders in terms of how they're using our technology and our platform to get there.
So this is what a lot of people would, in sort of the shorthand out there, call big data. Right? I mean, you pull all these different databases together to create profiles. And that's going to be helpful to better engage the consumer, like you said. What about the flip side? What about the privacy and security of their interactions with those players? How do you deal with that? And is that something that there's too much out there? The NSA probably is the other source that would have all this information you're talking about. Is that something consumers just have to recognize, the reality of the electronic world we're in?
It is. It is a reality of that. Privacy is important, but we're not talking about getting into private information and without consumer consent. But the reality is that a lot of information is already generated within the system. So, that is the reality of the world we live in today.
So where do we go from here with that? How do you are you applying that? Who are your customers today? Are you applying that to the insurance companies and the hospitals to be able to do better services? Or
we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what about the consumer? Is there ultimately some sort of a consumer product, or is it just all this in the background that's working so that the stakeholders can?
No, it is for the consumer. At the end of the day, the consumer is who matters the most.
Uh-huh.
And so for the consumer, what it enables is the most important thing for the consumer that we got to step back and ask is the fundamental problem. I'll put my doctor's hat on right now. It doesn't matter whether you look at it from a physician's perspective, whether you look at it from an insurance company's perspective or an employer's perspective. the fundamental problem that we have in the healthcare system today, which is the root cause for why costs will continue to go up, is engaging individuals on an ongoing basis to take better care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we as individuals don't do it on a consistent basis because we get bored. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right, that's right.
And so when you look at the root cause for why people get bored or why they fatigue, it's because the experience that they have day-to-day is cumbersome, it's hard to access, it's complicated, it's expensive, and it's boring. And the ability to engage the consumer on an ongoing basis and create an experience that motivates them the same way these same people engage with other things in their day-to-day life, whether it's their mobile phone or whether it's Facebook mm-hmm. or whether it's Twitter. But there are avenues of communication that have changed the way that we live day-to-day that we are addicted to, but it hasn't happened in healthcare, and you mm-hmm. have to wonder why. But yet, what has transformed that experience in terms of what we do in our day-to-day lives around these other things is because of the data. That drives Facebook, that drives Google, that drives Twitter, that drives Amazon. Why is it that the average American consumer or the average global consumer today is addicted to these services? It's because the data behind it has been able to create an experience that is delightful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go upstream, Doctor, and talk about, you know, the employer for a minute. I mean, because this all comes together for the employer who is looking to empower, the forward-thinking employer is looking to empower their consumers to become better consumers of health and healthcare, meaning their employees. What's the value proposition for the employer that you provide?
It's the same in that mm-hmm. for an employer today, if you come back to the example that I gave you earlier, an employer today has, they're going to be administering benefits. They're going to choose an administrator for the benefits mm-hmm. for their programs. They will have a wellness vendor. They'll have a disease management company. They'll have an incentive program. It is not uncommon for an employer today to have four or five different things, it's fragmented and it's chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the employers desperately need right now is something that enables them to bring all of those pieces together, that enables them to synthesize that experience and effectively have those programs work in tandem to optimize the engagement of the employee. And that's the black hole today, is that there is no technology that is able to do that. And that is what we're solving for employers today to help close that gap.
Doctor, your solution would appear to have the opportunity to tie in to some of these private exchange technology platforms.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's a great point. Because today in the exchanges, what is the problem? That you go in and you enroll, and, you know, there is no means of – first of all, let's step back. It's very tough to navigate. So you got to mm-hmm. go from the time you enroll – imagine the nightmare for the consumer, because you got to go to the insurance website, and then you've got to log into all of their programs. It's a complete black hole
for
the consumer as well as for the insurance company. The exchanges, the way they're set up right now, are not doing anything other than providing a gateway for people to buy insurance. And then what?
Yep.
Simply buying insurance is not going to give them access to everything that they need in terms of their care,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to do anything to either educate, motivate, or engage that individual in constantly taking care of their health. What we don't want to create the impression is that we're giving them a credit card or a debit card that basically says, do whatever you want, and we're going to pay for it because you now have been approved. That's a futile mission.
Yep.
And the wrong message that we're sending to consumers.
Yeah, Doctor, we're at the end of our program. And this has been a very interesting discussion. We'll have to have you on again. Leave our audience with a single thought you'd like to leave them with.
Technology can transform healthcare, and we need to use it to transform it the way that we have within what Google, Facebook, and Amazon have done, and that's the future of healthcare. And we can do it to engage consumers as motivated participants in changing the system.
Doctor, thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend up there, and look forward to talking to you again soon. To our audience, stay tuned for the next segment, Healthcare Consumers and Radio.
Membership. Are you an IHC member? Access to the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism's breaking news, industry trends, expert blogs, and networking with IHC's industry-wide member community. IHC membership puts you at the focal point of the dynamic health and benefit industry, allowing you to join the conversation and collaborate with industry stakeholders and your peers. Your IHC membership includes a subscription to Healthcare Consumerism Solutions Magazine, Healthcare Exchange Solutions Magazine, annual publications Healthcare Solutions Superstars, and Healthcare Solutions Outlook, a free white paper, and much more. Sign up as a free IHC member or $99 premium IHC member today at www.theihcc.com. That's www.theihcc.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Hey, this is Doug Field along with my co-host Ron Bachman, and welcome back to the final segment of Healthcare Consumers and Radio. And, this market has a lot of different moving parts, mm-hmm. and benefit programs are changing and evolving, and we've got the baby boomers emerging. Ron is like you and I. And join us to talk about a very important niche, hearing benefits, is Mike Reha, the Director of Sales Marketing with Epic Hearing. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Doug.
How are you?
I am doing well. How about yourself?
Doing fantastic. You coming to us from out in California?
Southern California.
Yeah, great to have you here. You know, we're in Better Hearing Month. Is that correct? Is that when May is?
We are. This is a big month for the manufacturers as well as the providers to initially not launched hearing care benefits and the reason why people should go and get their hearing checked.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit more about what Epic is doing and about the hearing benefit, because actually, I have a personal interest, too. That's where my wife wants me to go get my hearing checked.
That's your selective hearing loss, Doug.
No, well, but in all seriousness,
it's really changed in the last 2 decades. Hearing loss is starting to occur much younger in people. Part of it is the technology that has surrounded us. We call them the iPod generation. That the analysis shows that the majority of people with hearing loss are below retirement age. So 57% of Americans that do have serviceable hearing loss, they're the candidates for hearing instruments and accessories. And for the majority of these individuals, only 20% actually get treated. And part of the reason for that, it's not a covered benefit.
Hmm. Mike, Ron Bachman here. I really think this is an important area, and I'm glad to have you on the program here because as I read through some of the background for Epic, you really want to get out there and educate the public. It seems to me that especially the younger generation with loud music and concerts blaring, headphones, the earbuds, we do have a lot of hearing loss out there, and it's got to affect people on the jobs, not just their spouse or their significant other not hearing or understanding them. We like to kid about that sometimes with our so-called selective hearing loss of our spouses, but this is a real important area. Talk to us a little bit about, from your perspective, the issue and the significance of hearing loss in the workplace.
Yes, we did a survey among 1,500 full-time workers, which we conducted right at the end of 2013, and a study suggested that 12% of employees say they have diagnosed problems for which they're getting treatment for, but another 30% suspect they do have hearing problems, but they have not sought treatment. And of these, almost all, 95% reported that the untreated hearing loss was impacted them on the jobs. And so people are concerned about going and getting their hearing treated. There is still a stigma attached with hearing aids, unlike some of the other specialty care benefits. People still associate hearing loss with aging, and they don't want to admit the problem that they to their employers that they have a problem, because if they go to their employers and tell them that they have a hearing problem, the likelihood is that the employer will view them differently than somebody that doesn't have a hearing issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got some publications that you use out there for public education. There's something called Listen Hear. Can you tell us a little bit about that publication and how successful and widespread that is right now?
Yes, we just launched this new campaign yesterday called Listen Hear. It's on our website, www.epichearing.com, and it's a public education initiative with a video infographics that employers can share with their employees and integrate into their existing health education. Again, our goal or objective is to get employers and employees to consider hearing benefits similar to how they are offered in a marketplace, similar to what vision and dental is offered.
Right now, even if you're not covered for some of these areas under your traditional benefit plan, one of the interests we have here, obviously, at the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism is the account-based plans. These benefits can be paid under HSAs, the health savings accounts, health reimbursement arrangements, and people can set aside FSA dollars for that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Again.
Is there an opportunity, Mike, dental and vision, have a wellness connection? I think you pointed out with hearing benefit, the wellness and productivity connection. Is there an opportunity for you to look at more bundling with dental vision?
Yes, there's a lot of opportunities by bundling this product with other ancillary products. First of all, with vision and dental, depending on how you offer it in the marketplace, whether it's employer or employee paid, the likelihood is if you offer it to 10 employees, you're going to get 5 to 6 of those individuals using a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
With hearing, if you offer it to 10 employees, the likelihood is you're going to get 1 out of every 10. And the reason for that is that when you have hearing loss, you don't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to go see a hearing care provider. You adjust your lifestyle. Statistically speaking, in our industry, by the time somebody admits they have a problem to the time they go see a provider, on average is 7 years. And generally during those 7 years, what individuals do is they actually change their lifestyle by perhaps increasing the volume on a TV or a radio, or in a lot of cases, if they're having a conversation with somebody, they actually have to ask that person to repeat themselves over and over again. And generally when somebody does go and gets their hearing treated or checked, it's usually a spouse or family, another family member or friend, that encourages them to go get their hearing checked.
So tell us about your business model. Who are you selling to? What's your marketplace out there? Is this a product you're selling to employers? Is it available to individuals? Is it mainly through an insurance concept? What's your business model?
Sure. Our business model is that we're marketing this to a lot of different types of segments. First of all, we're marketing this to employers, employees to consider hearing benefits. We're marketing this to other managed care organizations to consider hearing for their membership. We work with Taft-Hartley funds. We work with association and groups. We offer this product on a group platform, which can be offered either as a standalone product or it can be combined with other ancillary products. In the near future, we are coming out with individual as well as small group products.
Yep. Mike, I would think that you would have a unique opportunity with the emerging private exchanges as they take their place in the marketplace. One of the key drivers of a successful private exchange is going to be offering an expanded voluntary benefit supplemental health offering. Are you working with any private exchanges right now, or is it still too early for you?
It's still a little early in its infancy when it comes to exchanges, but there's been quite a few exchanges that have come and expressed interest as far as a second go-around to consider some of these ancillary benefits, and one of these types of benefits is hearing, because currently right now most major medical plans do not cover any products when it comes to hearing loss, and for 90% of hearing loss, the only accommodation is hearing instruments.
Yeah. Mike, coming back to May being, Better Hearing Month, what would you at Epic like our audience, what would you like them to know and do during this crucial month where you're trying to get the word out?
What's very crucial is to go out and start talking to your clients about hearing benefits. Through some of the initiatives that we're doing, we can provide the education support as well as the video support for groups or individuals to consider hearing benefits. This is a unique benefit that it's never been offered this way, and we're just trying to get people to get engaged in the fact that it's time to consider these type of benefits and that hearing is not just for old age anymore, that the statistically speaking, that the majority of people with hearing loss are below retirement age. So this is something that groups and individuals need to consider in the workplace, that hearing is becoming much more prevalent in today's line of work than it may have been maybe 20 years ago.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the new technologies that might be available? I know when I went and had my hearing tested, they said, you know, I couldn't hear a certain range and that was sort of a natural aging process. But for people who have more significant hearing loss, we hear so much about technology improving so many other parts of our healthcare delivery system. Tell us about hearing aids and or other ways to improve hearing. What's available out there for people?
Well, generally right now, for the majority of people with hearing loss, the only accommodation is hearing aids, and hearing aids have become quite sophisticated probably in the last 2 decades. I've been in this industry now for a little over 25 years, and when I first got in this industry, it was all analog products. And today's market, most of the manufacturers are manufacturing digital technology, which means they can separate speech from noise. They can work in a variety of different types of environments. They even have cell phone capacity where if somebody uses their cell phone, they're able to use these devices. And so they work in a lot of different variety of situations, and they've almost become smart hearing instruments.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about prevention? You know, are there things that you suggest or recommend, or are there services that people should be doing in terms of whether it's eardrops or some other care that we should be doing with our ears that we're not doing today that could help prevent the problems in the future?
Yeah, what we're encouraging people to do is to get their hearing checked regularly, just like they get their vision and dental checked. And so, for example, in your 20s and your 30s, every decade you should be getting your hearing checked. So if you have any threshold changes, at least you know what you're exposing your ears to, whether it's at work or your lifestyle, and what you can do to protect your ears. Especially when you go into loud environments, the number one recommendation is to wear ear protectors. And a lot of people don't do that. So we're in the stage where a lot of baby boomers have went to rock concerts, and they come out with their ears muffled. And part of the reason for that is that they're not wearing hearing protection. Yeah. And so we suggest that people wear hearing protection in loud environments, and that when they get into their 40s, just as their vision acuities decrease, they should get their hearing check on a regular basis. It's just, and then when they get a little older in life, get them checked on a regular basis every 2 to 3 years.
Mike, we've got about 30 seconds to go. Would you give our audience one or two takeaways? We really appreciate you being with us.
Yes, I think the number one thing to consider is hearing benefits for your groups, and that hearing insurance can be very inexpensive, and there's a lot of opportunities to offer this type of coverage to your members, whether it's through fully insured, self-funded, or discount-type plan offerings, that hearing is starting to become much more prevalent among the workplace, and this is something that you have an opportunity to go out and talk to your groups about a new opportunity and new benefit, which is relatively inexpensive to offer.
Hey, Mike, well, listen, I appreciate you joining us. You have a great weekend. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
I appreciate your time, and have a good weekend yourself.
Thank you. And to our audience, this wraps up to this week's segment. We'll be off next week, busy at IAC Forum here in Atlanta next week, and we'll join you the following week on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.